Welcome to KBOO, Sarah Prager.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
As a professor of OBGYN at the University of Washington, you have worked for some time now to train students in the field of family planning, from contraception, abortion procedures, miscarriage management, to pregnancy, labor, and delivery. Many areas of medicine involve moral judgments of various kinds that affect clinical care and access, and judgments often directed at marginalized groups particularly. But perhaps nowhere is moralizing more palpable than in obstetrics and gynecology, the field most associated with the healthcare needs of women. There were two Supreme Court decisions over the past month on reproductive rights, one upholding the rights of religious employers to deny birth control in health plans under the Affordable Care Act, and the other where the court ruled in favor of the Center for Reproductive Rights in Louisiana around requirements for providers. Let's start with the Supreme Court decision on birth control. Tell us what the decision involved and how you read that ruling.
Thanks for asking. It's interesting to have two such important cases involving family planning to be decided in such a short period of time. The contraceptive case really was looking to expand the kinds of employers who could choose to not provide contraceptive medicine to their employees simply because of having a moral issue with contraception. That's really all that it states. What the ruling actually said was that certain employers can do that, but the ruling also pushed the decision back down to the lower courts to figure out if this particular case had enough standing to deny coverage to these particular employees. So it wasn't really a final decision. It pushed the final answer back down to the lower courts.
In the film, Our Bodies, Our Doctors, we'll hear more about that later. You've spoken about religious control over healthcare decisions. How is this part of that larger problem in terms of religious control over healthcare in this country?
It's a great question. And the particularly Catholic hospitals or healthcare systems are able to deny certain types of services because of the Religious Freedom of Reproduction Act, or I can't remember exactly what it stands for, RFRA. And what this basically does is it puts in the primary position religious freedoms and puts human rights and those individual freedoms actually below religious freedoms. So in a lot of Catholic healthcare systems, the ethical directives that come down from the bishops actually are able to supersede what would otherwise be standard practice of medicine. And sometimes they can deny services for really urgent healthcare needs to women, including providing care for ectopic pregnancy, as well as contraception or abortion care.
So are there parallels of this sort where employers have been able to deny legally and medically proven forms of care to patients?
Yes. So one of the problems with this power that the Catholic Church has with Catholic healthcare systems is that so much of the country actually now has a Catholic healthcare system predominating. So it's about 12 to 15% of hospital beds in the country are owned or controlled by the Catholic Church. And for instance, in my state, in Washington State, 45% of hospital beds are controlled or owned by the Catholic Church. So it gives women not a lot of opportunity to actually choose to participate in care in those systems or not, because that might be their only option. And this creates a lot of confusion for women because these policies are not often well displayed or well documented when they're signing up for care. And we see that now with some of these rulings over the past couple of years with trying to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, that not just religious institutions, but also non-religious institutions are now trying to be able to deny healthcare coverage for certain women's healthcare aspects, primarily contraceptive medical access, simply because they morally are opposed to that.
And that's sometimes described as the conscience clause. And of course, conscientious objection has a long and proud history in the anti-war movement and other areas of life, and is important to protect in some areas. How is it different here, this idea of withholding a service based on moral objections?
Well, Jan, really the primary way that it's different is that when it was first conceived around military conscientious objection, it's the powerless person, one individual person, going against the powerful, which would be the government or the military body, saying, I object because of my moral or religious grounds for participating in this military service. In this instance, you have the powerful, which is the organization or the company or the church or a university, saying, or a hospital, saying, we are not going to provide this service because we morally object, thereby making irrelevant all of the thought processes and morals and religious beliefs of their employees.
And this is particularly problematic in that so many people get their health care plan or have health care through their an employer-based plan, including under the Affordable Care Act.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole system of having healthcare be derived from somebody's employment began in and after World War II, when there wasn't actually money to give people any additional benefits. And so they had to come up with non-salary benefits. And one of the ways they could do that was through providing job-related healthcare. That system now doesn't really function well because it leaves out so many people who are either self-employed or underemployed or unemployed. And the other part of that problem is that even for people who have employment, it's not like they're going to pick their employer based on whether or not they're going to be giving them certain specific healthcare coverage. They often don't even know what their healthcare coverage is going to be until they are employed. And what happens in a system where an employer can just choose to say, I am going to make contraceptive benefits not a part of your healthcare benefit, it's really just gender discrimination, in my opinion, because what it's saying is that these healthcare benefits for which these employees are paying are going to exclude this one part of only women's healthcare that is so critical for women's health and well-being. And there's just really no rational reason to do that other than to discriminate.
Given that the fight over contraception was won some time back, most Catholic sexually active women use birth control. Something like 90% of the population supports the legal right to contraception methods. Why are we fighting this on this particular front, given that that battle seems to have been won long ago?
I see this as an extension of some of the other conservative radicalism that we're seeing happening in this country. And you're absolutely right. These do feel like battles that we, quote, won long ago. And part of the problem is that now there is a sense that these are battles that were won. And so many, particularly younger people, don't either appreciate or understand that there are rights that could be taken away because they never had to play a part in actually gaining access to these services. I think just like we're seeing a huge backlash against people of color, we're seeing a huge backlash against women. And I just think it's part of this radical conservatism that is not a majority of our country, but a very, very vocal minority.
Well, in the other recent Supreme Court decision this past month, conservatives moaned about a setback and that they lost on the Supreme Court ruling when they struck down a Louisiana law that could have left the state with a single abortion clinic. How happy are you with that decision? Is that anything to celebrate?
That's a great question. And the answer is there's a little bit to celebrate there, but unfortunately, not that much. This case in Louisiana was exactly the same, not similar to, but exactly the same as a case that was decided by the Supreme Court just 4 years ago in 2016. So there's no reason to think that what was decided in Texas shouldn't also be true in Louisiana. The only thing that was different was the composition of the Supreme Court with two new, more conservative members of the court. So this case came before the Supreme Court, and truly it was only Chief Justice Roberts deciding to side with the more liberal justices that, yes, indeed, this case was decided 4 years ago. And even though I don't agree with that decision 4 years ago, we said that this was the way it goes, and I'm not going to change our mind 4 years later. In fact, in that same decision from Chief Justice Roberts, he also basically asked for people to come up with other restrictions to abortion care that are not exactly the same to these restrictions that were deemed to be undue burdens, because those potentially could be legal. So I think it was something of a backhanded victory, if you will.
And part of a path that's being pursued toward not only overturning Roe v. Wade, but also dismantling many other reproductive rights that are particularly important for marginalized women, women of color. And it's always been the case that marginalized women have had more barriers around access.
That's absolutely true. And it's no question that given how much vitriol we're seeing right now against people of color and other marginalized communities in this country, that we're seeing also more vitriol against women. Because as you mentioned, especially within the realm of obstetrics and gynecology, which is 100% women's healthcare or healthcare for women who have some genetic female parts, then there's no way to ignore the fact that maternal mortality is much, much higher for people of color. And reproductive health access plays a huge piece in this. When women can't access contraception, they are far more likely to have unplanned or unwanted pregnancies, and they are far more likely to then need abortions. What we've seen since the implementation of the Affordable Care Act is that abortion numbers actually went down for the first time in decades. And we had the lowest numbers ever over the past 4 to 6 years. This is directly related to increased contraceptive access that was allowable and available because of the Affordable Care Act. If you put now more and more restrictions to accessing that care, it's going to increase the numbers of unplanned and unwanted pregnancies for all people, but especially for people who are more marginalized, and that's going to include people of color as well as teens.
And this broader campaign for reproductive justice that brings race and class and the work that women and people who bear and raise children, as well as the right to end pregnancies, into the movement, that you'll be talking about some of those issues in a webinar panel this Sunday, July 26, along with other providers featured in Our Bodies, Our Doctors, a film that I directed with a Portland-based team of filmmakers. And we'll be looking forward to hearing from you and the other panelists at this event. It's free and open to the public. And not only hearing what you hope viewers get from the film, but also your assessments of the political terrain ahead in the fight for reproductive justice and healthcare as a basic right. And people can learn how to register for the event on the website, ourbodiesourdoctors.com. In closing, maybe say a bit about why you decided to be part of this documentary.
Thank you. Yeah, it was actually a pretty easy decision for me to be a part of the documentary because of several reasons. The first is that as somebody who both performs abortions and teaches abortions and has for years, it's really critical to have a clear and accurate representation of what that actually is about. There is so much mystification, so much misunderstanding about family planning, contraception, and abortion in particular. And this documentary, I think, does go a long way towards dispelling some of those myths and misconceptions. And it really was a privilege to be able to have any part in an activity that would have that goal. So I was really appreciative of the opportunity to be a part of that documentary.
We are honored and grateful to have you part of this and also to be part of this public launch of the documentary that'll be now available online. Thank you so much for being with us today. This is Jan Hawken talking with Dr. Sarah Prager about recent Supreme Court decisions on reproductive rights. Keep up the good work and we'll see you on Sunday.
Great. Thank you so much, Jan.
It's a new dawn.